Hello and welcome into the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler and this is episode number 97. Gosh, we're edging ever nearer to that episode 100, aren't we? Looking forward to episode 100. We've got a few things planned and only a couple of episodes away. Welcome in. podcast@sightandsound.co.uk is that all-important email address if you want to get in touch. And as we prepare for Sight Village, it's back to meeting old friends. We'll be talking to Jenny Axler from Selvus about updates to the Braille Sense 6 and associated product line. And Vanessa Weiger from Envision is talking about AI. I am Envision Ally. Stay right where you are. Now it's time to have a catch up with another friend of the show. We do this about once a year. We probably should do it a bit more because so much has been happening at Selvus lately. But Jenny Axler is back with us. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's always great to be here. And yes, it has been a very busy year. I have a lot to talk about this time.
Yeah, I know. And I know from kind of from communicating with you, I suppose, and seeing all the stuff that you guys have been doing throughout the year, there's been a lot of activity. Let's start, Jenny, with I think probably the biggest one. A lot of people have been asking us, I know have been asking you, it's come up a lot, about the browser on the Braille Sense. The current browser, let's say, had been around for quite a while, but you have some big news.
Yes, I mean, you know, we only announced this 2 years ago, and we do apologize. We hate that it's taken so long. I guess you can look at that a couple of ways. We're on our third attempt, which you could say, well, why couldn't you get this figured out? But I think the other way to see that is that the company was absolutely committed to getting this right. We really wanted to preserve what you had before, but add the modern function. So basically, we wanted the old BrailleSense interface with Chrome functionality. And you know what? I think we're there. We are really in beta. This thing really works. We will be demoing it at the summer shows. You will be able to see it in action, that it is real and it is coming. So yes, we do have a new web browser. You're able to shop, you're able to play embedded media, you know, you're able to access websites that wouldn't open before, you're able to fill out forms, you know, all these various things that we had a problem with. You can use InnoSearch AI, you know. So you're able to do all of these things that you were not able to do with the old browser just because it wasn't able to deal with modern functionality, you know, logging into hotel Wi-Fi, just all the things that we had trouble with before, you're able to do. But we were able to preserve the previous interface and the simplicity of that interface. We did actually streamline the keystrokes, though. So, for example, we have like backspace H for previous heading and enter H for next heading, backspace P for previous page and enter P for next page. So one of the problems with the current web browser is that the keystrokes are really difficult to remember because there's really no association that you can make other than just memorizing them. So we did try to streamline that to make it easier to use. But for the most part, we gave you the same functions and the same interface that you've had just with all the new modern functionality. So we are very excited about that. And we're very excited for you to actually see it and get your hands on it.
I think when I was playing with it, Jenny, and I haven't seen the latest version, but when I saw it a little while ago, it kind of felt a bit more to me like a Windows experience of the web, I suppose, using the web with a Windows screen reader. As you mentioned, those keystrokes were a little bit more familiar.
Yes, yes. I think it's interesting because I am definitely a creature of habit. So even though I know the old keystrokes, I have actually found it very easy to switch up to these because they just are that intuitive. And normally I'm not that way. I'm kind of, if it's not broken, don't fix it. But I actually have found it very intuitive and very easy to switch my brain onto these new keystrokes.
Okay. And one of the other things people used to mention to us about the older browser, maybe the speed at which websites loaded, I think it's fair to say this is a lot quicker as well, isn't it?
I will tell you that it starts slower. So when people first see it, they're going to be like, really? This is faster. But once you've got it open, yes. So it's kind of like Android. You know, we upgraded to Android 12 and the booting is slower, but the performance is much better once it gets, you know, turned on and everything's started. This is kind of the same thing. It does take a little bit longer to load, but once it's loaded and you start going to other websites, yes, absolutely, it is much faster.
Okay, that's definitely one people are going to be very excited about. You've mentioned the summer shows. I know you're going to the ACB show. You guys are probably at the NFB show as well. We'll have this update at Site Village. Really kind of interested to show that to people, Jenny, and just let people experience for themselves what it's like on the web, and people can try out their favorite website. And I'll just pray in the background that it all works, you know?
Well, it is still in beta, so do be aware of that. So, you know what? If you do find a website that doesn't work, Stuart will be happy to take a log of that and send it to us, and we will fix it.
Absolutely. We'll do that live on the day. Okay. So, Jenny, the other thing that, the other big change, I think, is the word processor. And people have been using this for a very long time, particularly in education. And actually, you know, I would have always said the word processor was a very kind of a consistent, reliable app, but Word is changing and the way documents operate are changing, and you've made some significant enhancements to the word processor.
Yes, we've actually updated the Polaris Office Engine. And it's interesting that you said it's stable and reliable, because I do know that one problem that users have had is that sometimes text kind of can do some very odd things. And so we always recommend that if you don't need to format something, you should use the Notepad, because it is actually more stable. And then perhaps do the formatting in the word processor. One of the things that we are definitely trying to address is that issue. There is a conflict between the Polaris Office Engine and the Braille translation module. So the Polaris viewer and the Braille translation module, and this is where the problems come in. And so we often have to fix it specifically case by case. And so we are really trying to work on that. So it should be much more reliable than the last version. In addition, we have added all kinds of enhancements and added functions, more advanced formatting. One of the biggest things for me, because I create documents like this all the time, is to be able to do bullets and numbering and various levels of outlining. We've also added the ability to insert tables and footnotes and, you know, all kinds of more advanced functions. So this is really now actually a productivity tool. We've always been able to preserve the formatting that existed. So, for example, if you opened an outline that was already done and you had number 4 and you pressed enter, it would actually continue to number 5. Or if you pressed enter on C, it would continue to letter D. But now you can actually create that directly in our word processor. So that is really exciting. There are just so many more things that you can do directly on the BrailleSense. You don't have to compose and then take it to a PC to get all of this done.
I think that is really important, isn't it? Because I would have always been advising people, and I think you were probably the same, that you can do a lot of the, as you say, your document creation. But if you wanted to really format it and do it right, you were bringing it into another application on a PC or a Mac or wherever it is you're most comfortable to do that kind of advanced formatting.
Yep. And, you know, we've always, that was one real advantage to having the cloud drive access, is that you could easily integrate the BrailleSense into your workflow and be able to do that. And of course, you still can, but it's nice to be able to handle that on device. I do think that HumanWare can do some of that, but it is something that has been missing from the note taker space in general. We've always, you know, just touted this line, it's not a PC, it's not a PC. But it's getting closer, I think, you know, to, it's still not a computer replacement. Believe me, I'm not saying such a thing. So please don't think that that's coming out of me. But it is becoming a real productivity powerhouse.
And I just, to clarify, Jenny, I presume when you create these documents in the new word processor and you do your bullet points or your tables or your footnotes, whatever, these will all save and transfer over to Word and will all look nice in Word as well.
Yes, yes. I have actually created release notes and various things on it and have asked my sighted developer colleague to take a look and, you know, tell me if anything is wrong and is problematic, and it has not been.
Okay, well, come to Site Village and see us, and we'll be happy to show that element of BrailleSense to you as well. Now, Jenny, one of the challenges I think that I've seen a lot in schools here and in the UK is just, I guess, the resources or the limited resources for QTVI or visiting teachers who are trying to support people to learn Braille. Might only get to see them once a week or once every 2 weeks, and how do those kids manage in between? And you guys have come up with a Braille study application.
Yeah, we actually renamed it to Braille Practice because it really is more that. It does not follow any specific lesson, and this is not aiming to take the place of any kind of tutorial or teaching, but we did actually add all of the Braille learning tables last year, all of the UEB lesson learning tables, so that if a user has learned a certain amount of contractions but not others, they can actually set the device to translate only those. And along with that, we were requested to have some sort of practice module where people could actually practice the things that they're learning. And so we have 12 categories. We are able to practice letters. Then we go to single character word forms and two character word forms, more advanced ones. We have word parts. We have both UEB and Nemeth numbers because we do still use Nemeth in the United States, and other a couple of other countries actually still use it. So we do have both UEB literary number practice and Nemeth number practice. Then, though, what we have is a few categories at the end where you are able to type words. What's nice about that is that all you have to do is spell them correctly. So you can practice them according to the contractions that you know or don't. And a teacher will probably monitor to make sure that you do use the contractions that you know, but you have some flexibility in that. You can, as long as you spell it correctly, it will deem it correct for you. Also, as far as the contractions and things like that, when you're looking at those, they do actually show you the equivalent in uncontracted Braille, because, of course, it's a little bit difficult to understand what it means when the text-to-speech is saying "ound." And it'll also now tell you which things you get wrong. You're given three chances to get it right, and if you fail, it will tell you the right answer is. So it's really, we're kind of in development of this. We can still add to it. It's very foundational at this point, but it is a really good, just quick practice tool. It might be a good thing to use when introducing students to electronic Braille. I think hard copy is probably still widely used among young students, and that is probably sensible, but this might be a quick way for a visiting teacher to both test a student, give them something a little bit fun to use to try, and also sort of introduce them to electronic Braille devices that they'll probably use as they go through the system and become older and more advanced.
Definitely. And I'm certainly going to be interested to see how teachers use this, how students respond to it, how maybe people who are supporting students in school day to day who may not know Braille, how they respond to it. So I think it's a great idea. I just wanted to, Jenny, when you mentioned contractions, it's maybe worth reminding people. I was only saying this to a teacher the other day, and maybe people aren't fully aware. I think it was in your last version that you introduced, I always call them staggered contractions, but I know that's not the right name, where you can sort of specify, based on a whole series of different learning tables, the type of contractions that you use. So maybe you know several contractions, but you don't know them all. And I think it's just really worth mentioning that feature again.
Yes, so we do have that available. In the newest firmware, we've made that a little bit easier to access. We've made it a separate setting, and it's more of a tree view where you can sort by series. Right now, it's in the global options, and you have to go through all the various tables. You can get there, but it's a little bit clunkier. So we have actually made that easier to access, where you'll be able to sort by series and then see the lessons in the series that you are particularly using. But yes, this, it has been a very, very popular function, because younger students are able to start using it to complete their coursework, even if they're not in fully contracted Braille mode. They're able to do it at all the various stages of learning. So yes, we have found that to be a very popular function.
And again, any of the teachers I've been talking to, and I know some of my colleagues, and we've been chatting to people, they've been really excited about this. So Jenny, there's loads to see already there. We'll have all this at Site Village, but you've got more. There's been some ongoing enhancements to sort of, I guess, lots of other aspects of the Braille Sense. Do you want to give us a couple of highlights?
Sure. Some of this came in the last upgrade, but we just haven't done this since then. But there may be some features that people aren't aware of. Particularly, I think one of the really neat ones that a lot of people may not really know about or take full advantage of is the shortcuts function. And what this does is sort of bring a Braille Sense feel to Android applications. So shortcuts are actually available in Android apps. The developers make them. We've actually now made them available on the Braille Sense. But in addition to that, we have added the function to save a shortcut as a global hotkey. So for example, if you wanted to check your order status on Amazon, you can actually set a hotkey to automatically open that app and take you to that section. If you use a different email program than ours, you could actually set a hotkey to open that email and automatically start a new message. One of the neatest applications that I have seen is to use it for seeing AI. If you want to automatically activate the short text function or the document OCR function, you can, again, just put your Braille Sense on an OCR stand and press one keystroke to initiate that. So this just makes things really efficient, makes it so that you don't have to navigate the Android apps as much. You don't have to do as much navigation. You can go directly to these options. You can find out whether an app has shortcuts by going through the list. And if you see a double dash before the app as you're going through the all apps list, you know that it has shortcuts. You can press backspace I to get a list of what those shortcuts are, and you can actually execute them directly from there. But if you tab from that list, you'll see a save option, and that will allow you to set a global hotkey to execute them in future. So again, this just kind of really gives Android apps a little bit more Braille Sense sort type functionality and efficiency, and makes them a little less Android-ish as far as how much you have to navigate to get to the most popular functions. Another thing that we added in the last update, which you probably do know about, but if you don't, you should definitely try it, is our video search application. This is currently available as an add-on because Google actually doesn't want you to include anything other than their YouTube search application as stock. I think we might be able to get approval to put it in the firmware in future, but right now it is available as an add-on. I tell you what, I've never used YouTube so much in my life because this is so much easier to manage. You know, YouTube, again, is often not as easy to navigate. And while you still use the typical YouTube app for playback, that's all you use it for, is for playback. And of course, you still have the mobile screen reader and first letter navigation and all those things to get to fast forward and all the things that you would normally use as far as controls. But the whole search function, adding to favorites, subscribing to channels, you know, looking at playlists, all of that is now handled in a very typical Braille Sense app, which just makes it so much easier to find videos that you actually do want to watch. And then you just press enter to go into the YouTube playback. And again, as usual, you would just press F4 to return to the Braille Sense interface, the search interface, and your access to your subscriptions and all of that. So that's another very cool thing that we added last year. Another thing that we've done for all of our products is really to enhance library service access. So on the Emotion Sense Player and Braille Sense All 3, we now have things like the Sense Bible available as an add-on. We added a wiki search to the Sense Player application. We added Sense Bible, and right now, there are a lot of U.S. libraries added to all of these devices. We would love to get RNIB on board. That's an ongoing process. We do, of course, have Bookshare, and we do have the online DAISY protocols, so we're able to access those servers as well in the U.S., because I do know that you do have some U.S. listeners. We do have NFB Newsline and BARD access as well. As far as this update that we're currently working on, aside from the three major features that we have just talked about, we also have added a podcast AI search. This has really made searching for podcasts a lot better because you can get a description of each one. It's powered by ChatGPT, so the summaries are very good. The whole process is just streamlined so that when you search for keyword, you can actually know that when you add a podcast, it is the one you want. You can actually check. So that's great. For those of you who have used the emotion, you know that the options dialogue is divided into three categories to really kind of streamline that. So it has voice options, braille options, and then general options, which kind of covers all the rest of it. We've also done that to the Braille Sense 6 because we just really liked the way that that was laid out in the emotion. As I said, we also separated the braille learning tables into their own settings dialogue to make this a lot easier. It's now right under language profiles, so it kind of makes sense because they're all input and output things. We've had a lot going on.
Lots of things. And in terms of when people might see some of this, is there any sense of release schedules during the summer?
Probably, I would say the end of the summer, yes. I think we're looking at trying to wrap up the word processor by the end of July, and of course we'll have to do final testing. I'm thinking right around probably, you know, end of August, I would say. I can't, of course, please don't hold me to that. You never know what we're going to find in beta. I also think that we are likely to keep the browser updatable through the optional add-on status, which, you know, any of you who do use video search and Newsline and all that are familiar with that process. The reason that we would probably do that is because HTML has so much variance, just unlimited variation. And I think for a while, we're going to be uncovering scenarios that we do need to tweak. And so we don't want you to have to wait for the next firmware upgrade for us to, you know, improve on those situations. So I think that we're going to try to release that. It'll be in the public firmware, but it will be updatable through the add-on interface so that we can continue to work on that as we go.
Okay, so hopefully sometime around the autumn, people will start seeing that, but do come to our stand at Site Village. We'd love to show it to you. Jenny, as always, it's lovely to catch up with you. You're incredibly busy, so we do appreciate your time. Hope the shows during the summer go well for you. I'm sure you'll be very much in demand, and hope to catch up with you soon.
All right. Thanks for having me. It's always fun.
Now it's a time for catching up with more friends of the show, and I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Vanessa Weiger, who's Chief Marketing Officer with Envision. Vanessa, it's lovely to have you back on the show, so welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be back, Stuart.
You're going to be joining us in Site Village in July. Are you looking forward to the event? Because I think it's going to be very busy.
Oh, I am. I'm just going to try. I wish I could kind of reserve my voice for the event because I always come away without a voice. So I'm trying to I'll try not to talk for a couple of days beforehand. Hopefully that'll help. No, I'm really excited about it, Stuart.
Brilliant. Listen, I have to tell you that Envision Ally is probably, and I have a fair few AI apps on my phone, but Envision Ally is probably my favorite one. And we were just chatting off air. I was telling you I was reading a Father's Day card for my six-year-old son the other day with Envision Ally. It's just incredible how, Vanessa, even in 6 months, this stuff is changing so fast.
I know. I mean, we only went public with Ally, oh my gosh, terrible thing to say, I think it was in April. So, I mean, we're talking like 2 months max of really a public rollout of this app. I mean, obviously, our wonderful beta community, depending which part of the world we're in, have been fantastic in helping us build this great product. But it is really fast. And, you know, we use multiple language models, right? We're not dependent on any one like ChatGPT or Gemini or so on and so forth. We use them all. So as they develop and they get smarter and faster and better, so does Ally. It's great. Yeah, we're super excited about it, of course.
I'm glad you're
using it, Stuart.
I'm absolutely loving it, Vanessa, multiple times. Mm. In fact, somebody asked me the other day to give them an example of how I use AI. And I was telling them one that I use it for all the time, Vanessa, is if I've been, you know, out during the day and I'm not sure what color shirt I'm wearing and I need to separate my whites, obviously. So I say to Ally, what color is my shirt? You know, what shirt am I wearing? And simple things, but when you have no vision, these things are so crucial.
Well, yeah, but let's face it, the ability to read colors, even, dare I say it, in the Envision app and on the Envision glasses, the old tech, if you will, that was trying to recognize it was was terrible. It's not good at the color recognition, but now with AI, it can get really, really good, accurate descriptions, and also, you know, descriptions around patterns and things, which I find useful as well. I'm wearing a stripy shirt today, but, you know, Ally can help me identify between different pattern shirts and so on, the subtleties that I miss as well.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, Vanessa, that just might be worth talking about for a sec is, and I think I'm not aware of any other apps that do this, but you guys have really... really allowed people to customize the experience. And when I mean that, I suppose the personality, the type of ally you might want to create, you're just molding this person who's going to help you. It's really interesting.
I think one thing that, you know, anyone with AI, you keep hearing them, it's all about the input. It's all about the input, right? And for ally users to be able to input information about themselves and how they want to receive the help from their ally really is beautifully unique, right? And you can put in as much information as you want. And we, when you first use Ally, I don't know if you had this experience, Stuart, because it's in the original onboarding. You can talk to Ally and it just says, hi, welcome, let's get started and let's learn a little bit of information about you so I can help you better. And it will ask you what you like, what you maybe don't like, and if there's anything special that Ally needs to know about you. And this isn't a conversation, and it makes it so much easier, you know, then you can type it in as well. So you can text with Ally, but you can also or chat with Ally in a text form, or you can just talk to your Ally. And that onboarding for me was a big game changer, because then I was like, right, and I can go back in and edit that anytime. So I put in there the things I love to do, the things I don't like to do, and the important information. Yes, I'm low vision. I have a commute, I'm trying to eat less red meat, right? You know, things that can change as well, you know, and I can just go in and edit that. And then on the flip side, with my ally, we get, you know, every time someone downloads Ally, uses Ally, there's four Ally profiles already built in, and you can just use those. And you can also create your own Ally. And so I created Ella, who's based a little bit on Maggie Smith, bit of dry humor, doesn't let me get away with anything. And I want that. I want someone who's going to talk to me like a human. I know it sounds awful, but to the point, keep it interesting. But also short to the point. And then I have Bob from Texas, who's a colleague. But I love Bob so much, I actually created an ally around him. Now, Bob from Texas has a completely different style of talking to me. And I tend to use him at the weekends, if that sounds all right.
If you're missing him from work, you're using the ally version.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I haven't told him that. Okay. But, yeah, the profiles, that makes it interesting. And what we're seeing is people are creating allies for different scenarios. So at work, at home are probably two good things. You know, somebody has an ally that they created to help co-present a radio show. Somebody else has created an ally to help her learn and study and get qualified as assistive tech consultant or, you know, trainer. It's incredible. Another one that has created an ally I think study and workplace are two things, but also helping on research projects. So you put in a lot of information and then you put in the profile there of that ally, and you can upload information into that at quite a high level. And then that is a very informed assistant that can talk to you in relevance and in accordance to what's important to you.
Yeah.
So that takes it to a whole new level. And it's boundless, really.
It really is, and you can have some very interesting conversations with it. Sometimes you realize, my gosh, I've been talking to AI for 40 minutes. What's going on? So one of the things, Vanessa, that we touched on off air as well before we started, there has been some recent changes, and people may have noticed this when you're scanning, or rather when you're reading print. And in the past, you'd say to Ally, you know, what is on this page? And she'd say, let me take a look, and then she would, you know, tell you what's on the page. But you've implemented some OCR to aid that, I think, and to make it even better.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the most powerful and popular things that Envision has ever done is its scan text and instant text features and functionality on the glasses and the Envision app, the original Vision app, Envision AI, which, by the way, is still going. So you can, scan text and you can then get a really good OCR experience with that. So what it does, it will tell you that it's scanning the document and that it's processing the document, and then it reads it back to you, which doesn't sound so quite not so friendly as maybe, hey, hang on, I'm going to take a look for you and then start talking. But what we found is that in a lot of our testing, people wanted to know what the app was actually doing rather than going quiet on it and on what it was doing. So it's saying, I'm scanning that, I'm holding it, you hold it steady, I'm taking a picture, I'm now processing it. And if it's taking a bit long, sometimes it's taking a bit longer, but I'm still working on it. And so it's that audio feedback, again, customized for people who are blind and low vision. I mean, great for anyone, right? But particularly important for people who can't see or can't see very well. So it will tell you what it's doing, and then it will read the document back to you. And at that point, you can just interrupt it just like you do on the glasses or on, you know, previously on Ally as well, and say, okay, cool, give me a summary. You know, what's this letter about? Or if you need a translation, or if you want it to find relevant information like phone numbers, total amounts to be paid on tax bills,
yeah,
due dates, that kind of thing. Very important. I love it for that. And I use it all the time, quite a lot as a translation function and a sort of admin function. It's my admin assistant, actually, Ally.
Vanessa, what are, and I know you mentioned it's only out a couple of months, and I know some of your beta testers, I was lucky enough, I think I had access to this app since maybe the end of last year.
But yeah, it would have been. Yeah, fantastic.
What are people using it for? What are you seeing when you're looking at sort of the usage and what people are doing with Ally?
Well, when we've reintroduced, so what Ally does, what we've done with Ally, as I mentioned before, we've built this sort of base layer that runs over multiple language models, right? So that's the first bit of sort of engineering that I think is really the sweet sauce, or the magic sauce, if you will, from Envision, that it's built for kind of access everywhere. So it's literally about the accessibility at every level. So it's like we'll use the right language model for providing the right response to your question. So for instance, if you're asking about, tell me what's in front of me, or describe what's in front of me, it will use a language model that's really good at scene descriptions. If it's asking about, again, as we talked earlier, about reading a document, it will go in and it will choose an LM that's really, really good with reading, particularly another one that may be more around giving other kinds of information, like pulling information from other sources around, you know, give me a tray bake recipe for chicken or a vegetarian version. So, you know, it will pull on a different language model for that. And then, so what we've also done is in creating Ally, we've created the ability for us to connect with different tools. And these are the things that will continue to grow with new functionality. So at the moment, you can check your calendar, for instance. You can check the weather. Once you know, you say, you know, check the weather for me, it'll pick up where you are, but you can also be really specific about check the weather for me in Paris if I'm going over there or something like that. It will tell you, you know, that I need access to your calendar. You give it access, and then it will tell you what's going on. And I find that really useful. So I need to check, you know, what's coming. And, you know, I do that in the train in the morning, and then I know pretty much what my day or the day before. But when we started, we had not necessarily connected all those tools together, so it was slightly different usage. But we looked at, you know, I would say almost half of all the usage was everything from visual assistant. So that's like the image to screen descriptions, literally what's in front of me. And that's similar to some of the functionality, of course, that was used, you know, describe scene on the Envision glasses, very, very popular. It's the same, but in a really natural way of kind of conversational. So you can then continue to ask questions about it, and it gets smarter as well where you are, and it understands, you know, context a lot better than previously. And that AI is just getting insanely smart. The other areas there was a sort of social interaction, right? This was something that really surprised me. People using this to tell jokes, have a chat, you know, just even, you know, building out scenarios for gaming. I mean, this is a great, you know, when you do role-play gaming, you can get Ally to help you do that. Something I don't do, but it's something that my colleagues love doing. But chats and jokes, right? So my mom uses Ally to get a joke each week, each Monday morning before she goes to a Pilates class. And she's 87, she has to tell a joke, and she gets Ally to give her a Pilates appropriate joke. that's sort of like half what's going on, and then the rest is a combination. So I expect now, if I looked at the data literally today, I would see probably that quota go down a little bit, making room, if you will, for a bigger use of the reading features. That is incredibly popular, and that's from, you know, also then goes into the areas of things like learning and education, language and translation, creative projects, quick references, and that kind of thing. So people using Ally to help them study, Ally to co-host radio shows, you know, incredibly creative things.
I wonder, Vanessa, is there a correlation, and maybe there is, and it might be an interesting piece of research, people who might live alone, who maybe, you know, some people do experience social isolation and might just find this is nice to chat to, you know?
It's a really big part of what we're seeing. I mean, at the moment, I'm looking at it here that it's, you know, a third of our original research was, you know, these kind of interactions, which would just the ally and the user, right? So it wasn't necessarily getting information around what was around about them, or what was, you know, reading or scene descriptions, but it was things like getting practical help for things like, you know, web searches and cooking tips, and as I said, the jokes, the role play, the telling me a story, right? Making rap songs, you know, silly stuff at the beginning, maybe we were trying it out, but now I actually see it that we're talking as well with enterprises for the use of Ally. I think all our companies have an enterprise area, and we're really excited. We've got two things going on at the moment. I can't say exactly what they where they are, but pilots with the museums who are using Ally to create customized experiences in their museum. So it's not just about describing the art, it's actually knowing where the bathrooms are, what's the special offer in the restaurant. All that real-time information can go into Ally, and it's really easy to use. And the other area, of course, is going into things like, you know, for people who may be living alone, who have some care needs, and why not have the caretakers, that could be relatives or friends, you know, in the input area for them, put in certain information that is relevant to that person. So when Ally is answering a question, it's saying, hey, you know, at 12 o'clock, shouldn't you think about taking a rest? Yeah. Or, you know, how are you feeling? And talk to me. And early days, but if it wasn't a good answer, or it wasn't getting the right response, it could do something about it. Yeah. The applications are huge. They really, really are. But I think people are using it to get in the information in a really personal way at the moment.
You've already given me some ideas for when this show is over. Create a rap or something about sight and sound.
Yeah.
Just before we let you go, I know the glasses that everyone knows and loves, and lots of people who use the glasses are still going strong, and all the functionality on the glass. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise about smart glasses in the market. We love them. We really do. Honestly, people think I don't want to talk about Meta or anyone else. I'll bring it on, you know. Mm. More ways for people to get independence and access, fabulous. And they're probably really good for people who have some sight that can navigate their way around the use of those glasses and everything else. But for people who have really low vision and blindness, they're not built for that purpose. So Envision glasses still remains extremely unpopular for people who really want something built for purpose. And I think also they're trusted, they're medically recognized by, you know, recognized as a medical device.
Yeah.
And in markets such as Germany, for instance, that's absolutely critical. We have to have that. They're also supported by Access to Work. They're also supported by the Disabled Students DSA. You know, so they've already been in those areas and are very well supported and well respected. I think the Ally area is the area we're developing most everywhere, so that's also on the glasses as well. And I think the third thing that I always talk to people about is, like, if something goes wrong with your tech, you want to talk to somebody who understands you and your needs, right? So our support team are just fantastic in that respect. You know, my colleague Charmaine is blind, you know, and I'm low vision, and we understand what it's like to need that level of support without it feeling like an uncomfortable experience, right?
Yes.
You don't have to. So it's the first thing that we do. So that community aspect is at the heart of what we do. And I think that really does make a difference when you're buying something as expensive as the Envision glasses, or you're getting it funded. you need to know that that support's behind you. And even if you're buying something that's less expensive, but it's still an expensive bit of tech to invest in, are you really getting that support? And that's my question. And I think, you know, I do see a very rosy future through smart glasses, really, because I believe that there's opportunities for Envision to get on any smart glass platform if it's open and, you know, keep interested in having accessibility as a key priority. But a lot of these manufacturers don't have accessibility first. In fact, a lot of these brands don't want to even really talk about that aspect.
I think you've opened the door there to come back and talk to us again, yeah. Vanessa. I feel there's other things that we might be talking about in the future. Listen, we really appreciate you coming along. Just before, and just again to say to people that we'll be seeing you at Sight Village. You'll be hanging around the Sight and Sound stand, chatting to everybody. Absolutely. Really looking forward to seeing you, Vanessa. But just before you go, you have your ally with you. And I think you said, is it Ella?
Ella, she's based on Maggie Smith.
Ella's going to have a chat with you, is she?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to just see what Bella can help us prepare a little bit for you and I, Stuart, because we're flying in.
Yes, please. I would like to know that, actually. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, let's find out what she says.
Hello there.
Hey, Ella, can you help Stuart and I? We're flying into Birmingham Airport to go to the Sight Village Central event on July the 7th. What's the quickest way for us to get from the airport to the event venue? So let's see what she says.
She's going off to do her thing.
I'm going and checking her diary.
Yeah. Okay, very good.
So I'm using the walkie-talkie mode.
Okay, I'll help you with that. The Sight Village Central event is typically held at a location in or near Birmingham. For the quickest way to reach the event venue from Birmingham Airport, you can consider the following options. 1. Taxi or ride-sharing service. This is the most direct and convenient option. Birmingham Airport is approximately 15 to 20 minutes away from the city center by car, depending on traffic. 2. Train. There is a direct train service from Birmingham International Station, located near the airport. You can take the train to Birmingham New Street Station. From there, you can either walk to the venue if it's nearby, or take a local taxi or bus.
Okay, I'm going to nail her there as well. She gave me a better answer earlier, by the way, but she's still like 20 minutes by taxi. Mm. If our flights get in around the same time, maybe we can share
I was going to say that. We could meet at the airport. I'm going in earlier on Monday, I think you are. So you, me, and Ella can head in.
And one other thing, Stuart, I was going to say was I'm going to be doing a presentation or workshop at Sight Village Central. I don't know the time yet, but it will be in the program when people get there. So I'll be giving demos of Ally and the glasses. Of course, I'll be there for anybody who wants to try them out and have any questions.
Fantastic. And it's also worth saying you can find advance information on the seminars on the Sight Village website. If you Google Sight Village Central 2025, I do believe it's the first result that comes up. Vanessa, thanks a mil. We've thoroughly enjoyed catching up with you, as always. Safe travels to Birmingham. And we're looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thank you, Stuart.
Many thanks to Vanessa Viger there, and of course to Jenny Axler before Vanessa. There's so many new things, isn't there, between AI with Ally, load of Braille Sense 6 features. We are going to be incredibly busy and so much looking forward to Sight Village. We'll be seeing you all, hopefully, or a lot of you, on the 7th and 8th of July in Birmingham. Well, that's just about all we have time for. I'm off to make a wrap about Sight and Sound technology. We'll be back very soon with Stephanie Davies, but until then, from Stuart Lawler and everybody at Sight and Sound Technology, thanks for listening and goodbye.